Hello, dear listeners. This is Basement Gaming, episode 64. My name is Herb, and I'm joined by my dear cousin Brigham.
Oi!
So this episode, Brigham and I try something new. We're going to be talking to one of our closest and oldest friends, fellow gamer, and loyal listener, John.
Hello.
This is the first of hopefully many little side quest interviews we're going to be having on the show, so we hope you enjoy. And as always, if you like the show, give us a follow on Twitter at BasementGaming9 and on your Apple Podcast listening app of choice. With formalities out of the way, welcome to Basement Gaming. I had to slip out my little Apple bias there at the beginning, but we're gonna just breeze right past it.
I was gonna say, are you not a Spotify man? What are you doing using Apple Podcasts?
Apple Podcasts. Well, hey, boys, here we are. First interview episode.
You excited? Yes, yep. History in the making right here. Basement Gaming first.
I feel honored to be a part of the history.
Yeah. So the idea behind this is, Miriam and I, we have our own specific gaming likes and things that we like to do, things we don't like to play, things we do like to play. We have our own opinions that people have been listening to for the past 64 episodes. And talking to John recently, he was like, man, I really wish I could come on with you guys and just shoot down anything bad you're saying, essentially. So we're like, why don't you? So we came up with this little sideshow we want to be having on here every once in a while, where we essentially just interview a gamer that's different than us, really, just so we get their perspective, what they like, why are they the way that they are, and just kind of expand our own universe a little bit, essentially. So here we are. John here is our resident completionist. So let's let John
be specific real quick.
Go ahead, John. Be specific. Let's be specific about like your completionist history. Just tell us about your gaming history, essentially.
Yeah, sure. So I started pretty early on, like I think a lot of people our generation started with the Super Nintendo. My sister taught me how to play the old Aladdin game on there. That was like my first official game. And back then, you know, I wasn't a completionist by any means. You know, I remember playing Ocarina of Time and I would just do the fishing like mini game over and over and over. And that's like all I would do. Like I wouldn't play the actual story because I had like a save file that was already completed from my uncle. Really, I became a completionist when the Xbox 360 came out. I went to like the midnight launch of that, and it was like a really big deal to have one at the time. And if you remember at the time, they launched the console with achievements, and it was kind of not really a universal thing yet, you know, believe it or not. You know, if you can think back to a time where achievements weren't on every platform. And I remember thinking like, what are these achievements things? What is this gamer score? Like, what's this going to do for a gamer? And I kind of had this idea that gamer score would someday translate into like cash. Like you could actually use your gamer score to like buy games and stuff. So at the time, you know, when I was in high school and I didn't have like, or maybe it was middle school, something, didn't have a lot of income. So I was like, if I just play all these games and get all this gamer score, maybe it can project me into playing even more games. And turns out that wasn't the case. I actually made heavy use of Gamefly, if you guys remember that service.
Oh, yeah. We all used it. Yeah.
the Netflix of gaming, as I'll call it.
The much worse version, but yes, essentially.
So I would pretty much play every game that came out on the 360 in the beginning. And at one point, I was in the top 100 on like the achievements leaderboard, like of all the people who had Xbox 360s, which I mean, it admittedly wasn't like a huge number of people, but still it's kind of cool to see that. Obviously over the years, the game has changed a lot. I'm no longer there, but you know, it was a cool time. That's kind of what got me into being a completionist. Although I guess I'll specify, I'm kind of like in speedrunning terms an any percent completionist. So I beat the game, but I pretty much never 100% the game. Maybe that'll be another interesting side quest, is finding someone who 100% every game.
Yeah, that'd be pretty fun. Wouldn't that be wild, bro? if you could use your gamer score to buy games.
Yeah, well, I remember thinking that too. In fact, I remember back when the 360 first came out, there was a level above Xbox Gold. It was like Xbox Platinum. Do you remember that, John?
Mm-hmm.
And you got like a little card.
Yeah.
Like you can put in your wallet. I don't remember all the details of it, but I remember it was something. It was like, and you can get like deal. I remember there was like a, you can get like a discount at Subway with it. And and yeah, because of that card, I remember thinking the same thing, like, oh wow, this gamer score, like these gamer points are going to translate to something you can like spend money on.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It wasn't really made clear. It was just like, you got these achievements. Every game had, you know, 1,000 possible gamer score. And it was so funny. Like some of the games would be like, you beat the game and you get it all 1,000, you know, it's like super easy. Uh-huh. And then there was other games where it was like, you know, kill 100,000 enemies in online mode. And it's like, you're never getting those points. Like it's just no scalability on the number of points you get or whatever.
So, okay, that's cool. So I guess you're saying is that originally when you're playing games and kind of getting into like, you know, any percent completing these games, it was more for the gamer points. But I guess, was there like a certain point or a certain game where you just said you didn't care about the gamer points anymore, you just wanted to keep beating games?
I guess the point really came when I ended up getting a PlayStation. I was like purely an Xbox guy for a really long time. And then one day I saw a trailer for Metal Gear Solid, the 4, I believe it was, and all bets were off. I had to play that game. So I didn't jump ship necessarily. I still had my Xbox 360, but you know, went out and got a PS3 Slim. And kind of like at that point, you know, I'm no longer getting achievements or gamer score. I'm getting trophies and it's a different system. And, you know, you kind of I had that internal conflict for a while of like, should I only play games on PlayStation that are, you know, exclusive to PlayStation and otherwise get Xbox? Cause I want to keep my gamer score up. But obviously I didn't keep up with that for very long.
So can you pinpoint a reason why you feel that every game that you touch, or most of the games you touch at least, you kind of have to beat the game? Would you say it's because you really want to know what the story is? Do you have some sort of sense of, like, you don't feel like you're complete with the game until you get to the end? Do you know why you really like to play the game, like, to the end? Because Brim and I were just like, if we're not totally feeling it, will stop. Have you ever felt that way? Like if you're not totally feeling it, you'll stop.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing. At first, I think it really was driven by, you know, story experiences. I wanted to get the full story. I mean, that was something that really kept me going with video games for a long time. I love the games that are story driven and story focused. And then after a while, you know, I started keeping a spreadsheet, keeping track of the games I'd beaten, which I didn't know many people who were doing that. You know, like you could just kind of talk about it casually, be like, oh yeah, I beat that, or oh, I didn't. Or you could look at like your gamers, your achievements list or your trophies list and kind of get an idea from that. But a lot of times it's not exactly clear, like when are you done with a racing game, for example. Some of them are just so open-ended that, yeah, I ended up keeping a spreadsheet. And that's when I think it got to an extreme degree where I was like, I want to add this game to the spreadsheet. I'm not enjoying it. Like I kind of want to just be done with it, but I also want to add this to my spreadsheet. So it's kind of a weird, I guess, personality quirk that came about eventually of just like, I have to beat this game.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Cause that's the thing about me is that I have a super short attention span. Like, once I start a game, if there's ever a moment where I get bored, it's so hard for me to keep going through it. And I guess I was going to ask the same kind of question of like, do you have any tips for people like me who are like, you know, I feel like I'm like infamously known for not beating games. Like John, I've told you this before and Herb knows this too. Like, I always say the best award that I can give a game is called the Brigham Beat It Award. Like if I can actually get through an entire game, that means it's probably pretty freaking good.
Right.
So yeah, it's like, I don't know. What are your tips? Do you ever like lower the difficulty, or do you, I don't even know, like games don't really have cheat codes anymore, but like what is it? Like what advice do you have for people like me who have a hard time getting through an entire game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head on the first one. Like, I am not ashamed to turn games down to easy or story mode or whatever. Especially with my, I guess you could say like play style of like wanting just play and experience as many games as possible. Like I don't value like restarting checkpoints every 2 minutes or doing a boss fight over and over and over, which, you know, that's part of the reason why I've never beaten like a Souls board game, for example. You know, these games where you just have to slog through it and just try over and over and over. Those are probably the games that I the least frequently complete, you know. I definitely advocate for enjoying the experience, turning it down to easy. There's no shame in it. And then also I know a lot of people are very against like looking up guides or FAQs or like watching videos on how to do things. And I do that all the time. Like, it's kind of funny. Kirsten, my wife, she'll be watching and you know, I'll get stuck for a moment. I'll like ask for her, you know, thoughts and she'll like give me like some pointers. And then I just 2 seconds later, I'm on my phone. She's like, "Are you looking it up?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
Hey, well, I'm very pro guide. Like if I'm somewhere for like 5-10 minutes, like this is ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because it's usually something really simple. It's right. It's rare. Like after, you know, all these years of playing, I'm kind of used to all the tropes when it comes to puzzles and places where you get stuck at. So I can kind of get there. It's like, all right, I don't know how to get out of this place. Let me look up. Maybe there's something on the ceiling I need to shoot down, you know, like things like that. But yeah, guides, don't be like, it's all about enjoying the game. If you're getting so mad at an area because you can't get out, you're not enjoying the game anymore. So just look it up. I mean, that brings me to like my next question. One of the questions I had on here is, what would you say is the worst game you've beaten? As in, I'm not saying like in the quality of the game, but the one that you really felt like, man, I'm really trying hard to get out of this game just so I could say I beat it and never look at it again. Like, is there one maybe a franchise or
that's
anything?
That's so easy and it's so, I'm going to get such hate for this, but it's honestly the Zelda games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So every Zelda game before Breath of the Wild, I did not enjoy. Like I mentioned in the beginning, like I played Ocarina of Time as a kid. I played Majora's Mask as a kid, but I never beat them as a kid. I always just kind of ran around and you know, killed bushes with my sword. Like I was never actually playing it to beat it. And at one point when I became, you know, sort of a completionist, I was like, I can't really call myself a completionist if I haven't beaten all the Mario games, haven't beaten all the Zelda games, you know, these sort of like cream of the crop Nintendo games. And so, I've beaten every 3D Zelda game, I'll say. I haven't played the 2D ones, but all the 3D ones I've beaten. Breath of the Wild was the only one where I like couldn't put it down. All the other ones, I would stop for a few months, stop for a few years, come back to it later.
Months, years.
Yeah, it was a long time coming beating Ocarina of Time. It was like, you know, literally years of my life before I finally beat it.
Wow.
That's hilarious. See, even he's human, Brigham. Even
Yeah, well, my thing too is like,
for us.
Yeah. When I put down a game, especially like RPGs, it's so hard for me to jump back into it. Like, I really want to play The Witcher 3 or whatever. And, you know, it's like RPG games, a lot of mechanics. I dropped it just like a few months and I came back and I felt like I had to restart the entire thing from the beginning because I was just so lost.
That's exactly what happened to me. Yeah. Like, same I stopped here. It for a few weeks and then I came back and like, I got to start over. This is awful. I don't know how to do anything. I mean, I have another question. So what would you say is your favorite kind of game to beat? It's probably a pretty easy question to answer. So I'll like expand it to like, is there a specific franchise that anytime a game from that franchise comes out, it's like, all right, I'm beating this in like a day or 2 days. Or is there like a genre of games like, let's say RPGs or just straight up story games or, you know, those interactive games like Heavy Rain or anything like. Just any genre of games you can think of that's like, oh, when this a game like this comes out, I'm beating it in like 24 hours.
Right. Yeah. So most of the ones that I beat right away are the ones that, like you said, are story driven. The cool thing is I have a backseat gamer or a companion gamer with me at all times, pretty much when I'm playing these games. So my wife, Kirsten, is typically watching. And if it's a game like especially the Sony exclusives, you know, Last of Us and Uncharted, those games and, you know, Horizon, she'll push me to like, okay, you know, like we can't stop here. Like, we got to keep playing. I want to see what happens. So, in fact, like Returnal, like as a little side note, I was so ready to give up on Returnal because it's very Souls-like where you just, there's no difficulty level. You just have to keep trying over and over. And
yeah,
she was like, I need to know what happens. And I was like, she's literally the only reason why I've beaten that game, because I did not I did not want to continue it. But I really enjoy, like, I kind of have like a wheelhouse of like, I go on the website, I'll plug it real quick, howlongtobeat.com. It's like a really nice resource. It's actually owned by IGN now, which is kind of interesting. They bought it out. It polls people and asks like how long it took them to beat a game, and you can get a sense of like the longest and the median and the like fastest playthroughs of each game. And my wheelhouse is like games that are 75 and above Metacritic and, you know, under 30 hours. Like if it's over 30 hours to beat it, I usually will only play it if like someone else has recommended it to me, or like I've played another one in the franchise, like Persona, for example. Those games are like 70 to 90 hours, but since I played one of them, like I know I'm going to enjoy it. I'll sit down and go through those.
Usually 30 plus hour games are also like pretty open-ended, and mm-hmm. they're not very like, hey, you've reached the end of the story. True. So it's kind of hard to pin those down. Mm-hmm. You going to say something, Brigham?
Yeah, I was going to say too, you're kind of talking about how you prefer the games that are like less than 30 hours to complete. And that kind of brings me to my next question. You know, I feel like these days, a lot of gamers are a lot more interested in the shorter games, you know, which in a way it's kind of interesting, because if you think about it, if you're trying to think of like how much, you know, bang for your buck in terms of like how much time you're going to be spending with a game, it would make more sense to be really into the games like super long. But I feel like I hear it more and more that, you know, gamers want shorter games, want like 10 hour games, 15 hour games, like max, even if the games were $60, to the point that, I don't know if you heard about this, but I think it was a week ago, there was some controversy, not controversy, just a lot of talk online about Dying Light. Do you know about that game? Yeah, it's a Dying Light 2. They made this announcement kind of like bragging about how long their game was going to be. And people were like, this is not a brag. Like, this actually sounds like a negative. So I don't know. What's your take on that? Like, do you like that games are kind of like on average getting shorter to beat? Or does that kind of like, you know, maybe disappoint you, because maybe there is something to be said about like those long games and being a completionist and being able to say you've played all these super long games?
Right. Yeah, no, I am biased towards the shorter games, to the trend of them becoming shorter. In fact, on Xbox Game Pass, they had like a little category, you know, they have like picks for you and action. And one of them was like bite-sized games. And I thought that was pretty cool. Like, they're calling out, like, these games are short little experiences you can have. And I think, you know, there's sort of like categories as well in this. Like, RPGs are always going to be on that longer end. And I think that they can still do a good job of it if they have, for example, you know, you take something like Elder Scrolls, Skyrim, and you can just play through the main storyline and get through it and under 20 hours, I want to say. I could be wrong on that, don't quote me. But, you know, like, if you are focused and you just want to see the main story, then you can do that. If you want to spend hundreds of hours doing every quest and maxing out every skill tree, like, that's available for you as well. I think that's a super good thing to achieve for a development studio. You know, we mentioned The Witcher 3. I know that a lot of people praise it because its side quests are like almost as good as its main story. Once again, I can't really speak to it because I only played through the main story. But yeah, like that's what I want to see, rather than, you know, take something like Final Fantasy X, where it's like, this game should be over, but you need to go and grind and kill, you know, thousands of bosses or enemies so that you can beat this final boss, like, just because you don't have enough XP or whatever. Like, that's the kind of games where I get the most frustrated. Where you're just, yes, like, there's a wall and you just have to like climb over it by, yeah, spending your time.
I'm in a boat of like, I think let's think of God of War, the most recent one. I feel like it's the perfect balance of, hey, if you wanna go off and do whatever you want, you can do that. But the story is here waiting for you whenever you want, and it's not gated by your side quests. Because yeah, that it feels real bad whenever the developer is forcing you to play their game by making you go grind something else so you can keep going, you know? It's, yeah, that could be real frustrating. He's like, let me do what I want to do, dang it. I bought the game. So, I mean, I guess we can, like, start going through some of the games we haven't beaten, and then you can tell us, okay, I mean, here's a quick beginner for that. What's your favorite short game that you've beaten?
Oh, man. Honestly,
like, under 10 hours.
Okay. Honestly, this is also a little controversial because I know it's not super well liked in the gaming community, but I think Call of Duty games have really succinct campaigns that are just,
yeah.
And I know it's funny because a lot of people just play Call of Duty for the multiplayer. Like, they never even see the campaign, but yeah, if you sit down and play through like Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, like, that's probably the first one I'll say that has like a really good story. That's just, I mean, if you're not into like action war type games, then you're not going to enjoy it. But there's some moments in those games that are like very memorable and very, you know, like interesting to play through. More recently, I actually played a game called A Short Hike. And it's kind of funny because it's actually got short in the name. So it's almost like a little nudge of like, this is a quick one. And yeah, I had like no expectations going into it. I just bought it on the Switch because it was cheap, and that was one that took about 3 hours to beat, and I was super happy with that. I was like, you know, if I had spent, and I beat it one night, obviously, I was like, if I had spent, you know, 2 more hours on this game, probably would have gotten sick of it, probably would have been over it, but they made it just long enough to where it was a great time.
Do you have a short game that you've really enjoyed, Broom, that you actually beat?
You know, I was actually trying to think of a short game that I'd play really, oh my gosh, yes, I do. I don't even know why I had to think about it. Of course. It's a tie. Same game company, but Inside.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fantastic game.
Love and what's one. The one that came out before Inside?
I think wasn't Inside the first one? Oh no, it's it's like literally just
Limbo.
Limbo. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Limbo is my favorite short game of all time. Inside's really good too, but yeah, I love Limbo.
It
tells
games.
A great story without like it's super simple controls and you can beat it in a day. I remember when I played it. I bought it. It was like one of the first games that came out on Xbox Arcade too. It was like kind of a big deal for a game to be digital only back then. And I remember buying it for like $20 and playing it all through one day. And I had a friend over and he watched me play it and he was like, "Wow, that was kind of a waste of money. The game's already over." But I was just like, "What are you talking about? That game was freaking amazing." And I still think back on it.
That's funny. I think the shortest game I've ever played that I can really remember that I beat was Hellblade. And that's about like a 7 or 8 hour game. And yeah, that felt very rewarding because that game is kind of scary and it's kind of sweaty. So I can imagine like 15, 20 hours of that, I'd get burnt out. Even though I'm suspecting the next one's probably going to be a little bit longer than the 7, 8 hours of the first one. Still, I think they'll probably keep it under 15, I'm guessing. Okay, so I think you said what your longest game is, I'm guessing, is Persona, right?
I think so, yeah. In terms of like just sheer gameplay, obviously, like there's games that I've played for a longer amount of time to beat, but it was more like because I got distracted and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay, let's start going through this list here. Like I said at the beginning of the show, you're just gonna give us like a short little rundown of these games that we've played. We either got distracted or didn't like them anymore. So I guess you'll just tell us, is it worth beating? Should we go back? Should we try to go back and finish them? And just give us a stars rating, I guess, out of 5. Like, is this worth? Okay, so I'll start. My first one is Death Stranding.
Okay. This one hits a nerve because I love Kojima games. I love Metal Gear Solid and, you know, huge fan of everything he makes. And so I am super biased on this one. But I also do recognize that this game is not for everyone. You know, a lot of people throw out the term walking simulator.
Amazon delivery simulator. Yep.
Yeah. And it's funny playing it now because like the context is so like similar to the real world we live in. You have to keep in mind that this game came out in 2019 before any of, you know, the pandemic stuff, and it's like so similar to like what happens in the game. I mean, without giving any spoilers, I think you at least know the basic premise is like people don't go outside, you know, and you're delivering packages. So I'm going to have to say, like, I definitely recommend playing through it. If you got through the first, you know, fourth of it, keep going. If you couldn't get through the first fourth of it, then it's probably just not something for you. And without spoiling it once again, I would say the game gets easier. Like, that's all I'll say about it. So if you just found it too hard, maybe try it again as well. And 10 out of 10 for me. I'm super biased.
All right, Burrow, your turn.
Okay. Yeah, so the one I have on my list is Grand Theft Auto 4. This one's kind of obvious. I know you like Grand Theft Auto, but has this game aged well? Like,
you
is it worth
going
back to play?
That, Brigham.
Oh man, I can't say I've played it within the last 5 years. But that being said, like, you know, the big differentiator with Grand Theft Auto and, like, say Saints Row back in the day was like, Grand Theft Auto was like the serious game, and then Saints Row kind of started out serious, like the first game, super serious, and then they just went over the top. And I think they kind of met in the middle there. Like, Saints Row, that's not true. Saints Row became even more over the top, and Grand Theft Auto 5 is like kind of more wacky. I mean, it still has a serious story, but the tone of Grand Theft Auto 4 is like, it's like a movie, you know, it's like a Godfather, Scarface, you know, one of those kinds of movies where it's just like you're on the edge of your seat, like trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And like, you know, no spoilers, but like, you don't expect a happy ending. You don't expect good things to happen. And, you know, if you enjoyed Grand Theft Auto 5, then I think, you know, you probably would enjoy the gameplay of Grand Theft Auto 4. It's different, but, you know, pretty similar. But the tone is the real differentiator. If you think like Grand Theft Auto 5 is too serious, then definitely don't go back to 4. It's like way more dark and serious.
It even looks more serious. It's all gray, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of sunlight. It's like the whole city is always in a dark overcast, like it's about to rain at all times. Yeah.
Right.
Grand Theft Auto 4 is, I think it's like the predecessor. The reason why Grand Theft Auto 5 is so good is because Grand Theft Auto 4 existed. I think it took a lot of the mechanics from that and a lot of the engine from that and like moved it to the 5. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Brigham. Beat Grand Theft Auto 4. What is the matter with you?
The problem is if I have to beat it, that means I have to play it on PC with the games for Windows. So
I've heard that's pretty rough. That's a pretty rough thing. Maybe I have heard that PlayStation is gonna bring it back to the PS Store, so hopefully.
Okay,
I've been itching to play it again.
Quick side note about that game: they have two expansions. The second one is the Ballad of Gay Tony, and I remember I had a launch edition Xbox. You know, like the Red Ring, infamous white Xbox 360. And when every other game I could play on it just fine, it wouldn't Red Ring somehow. You know, I got lucky on the sixth, you know, return and finally got one that worked. But the Ballad of Gay Tony, every time I launched it, it would just crash and not run. So I like had to beg a friend essentially to like let me borrow his Xbox for like an entire week while I played through it. And I just like, it was just kind of funny because it was a friend that I like didn't really talk to that much, but they lived down the street. And I'm just kind of like, how do I go about this without I'm being awkward? Like, can That's I borrow so your $200, $300 game console?
You don't even go here.
You know, and I actually have beaten the Ballad of Gay Tony, which is funny. Wow. I haven't beaten GTA 4. It's because Ballad of Gay Tony was the first time that they added checkpoints in the missions in Grand Theft Auto. That was the biggest deterrent. Like, nothing would piss me off more than dying in a mission and spawning at the hospital and being like, okay, go do it all over again.
Get good, Brigham.
Like, F that, dude.
That has, you know, lost its luster for sure. Yeah. And once again, like we went back to the beginning, if you have to put in cheat codes, Brigham, to beat it, no one's going to judge you. They have plenty of cheat codes for unlimited health and all that.
You know what the problem is, though? And I was actually going to bring this up earlier, is that games, sometimes it's like they punish you for making it easy. Like, I know in the Nathan Drake Uncharted Collection, if you play on story mode, it doesn't let you get trophies. And on GTA 4, I remember if you put on the cheat codes, it doesn't let you get achievements. And so a part of me was like, I don't want to play with cheat codes because even though I don't care about achievements, it was like the game telling me like, I didn't really deserve winning the game if I play with cheat codes on. I don't know. But wow, at this point, I don't care. So I would totally turn them on. So yeah, maybe I'll go
back and play that. The game is like, what, 20 years? I don't even know how old it is. It's extremely old. Who cares if you have an achievement or not? Play the game. All right. Let's see here. I think a big one for us, for both Barrow and I, is Witcher 3, which we talked about a little bit earlier. But yeah, I mean, I'm guessing this is another really highly rated one for you. Should we go back and play Witcher 3 the fifth time over?
This is another controversial opinion. Like, I know everyone says Witcher 3, best game of all time. I actually didn't really enjoy it. It was one of those things where, you know, Kirsten was watching me play it, and the story is great, like, for sure. You know, I don't know if you know, but it's a super well-known franchise in Poland. And when we went and visited, there was actually like, you could see like, you know, books like all over the place and like advertisements, which was pretty cool to see. But anyways, I started that game. I mean, it came out in 2016. I think I beat it in like 2019, I want to say. I had to keep restarting it over and over. The biggest problem for me was the movement. And I've heard other people say this as well. Yep. I think Nakey Jakey has a video where he talks about this. The movement in The Witcher feels like you're a like slippery human being. Like, I don't know. You just slide and glide on the ground. And yeah, it's just like you'll click in one direction on the stick and then click in the other direction. And it takes like half a second before it actually transfers the momentum. And sometimes that's like interesting and like a physics-y kind of game. But it didn't work for this game, in my opinion. Like, you want your character to just do what you tell it to do, you know?
Everything about the engine of that game made me not want to play it. It just, right. Nothing felt normal. Even the controls didn't feel normal. Like,
yeah,
things as simple as, like, get on your horse and you have to press a weird button. I'm like, what is, like, nothing felt normal.
Yeah.
And with a game that's that dense, I feel like I needed the gameplay to be fleshed out better for me. That's why it's like I keep leaving it and I'm like, oh, this is such a popular series, I need to play it. And I go back and I die. I'm like, I'm over it in like 10 minutes. I can't stand the gameplay.
Yeah, the sign of bad controls is when you have to have them constantly showing on the screen, which The Witcher is one of those games, like, it always shows you, here's the button to get on your horse. Like,
I always thought it was so dumb that it was like you had two swords, and like one sword is good for one thing. It's like, why couldn't it just be like, if I'm fighting a monster, just take out the silver sword, and if I'm fighting humans, like, why do I need to press an extra button for that? I don't know. I understand maybe that's more like tactical strategy RPG thing, but one is obviously the right choice and one's obviously the wrong choice in each situation. So it's just like one of those like little minor controls. I was just like, this seems totally unnecessary.
Right. I will say, if you turn that game down to easy and don't care about any side quests, you can still get through it like without much worry. You don't have to grind. You don't have to. I remember there was like this whole thing about how you could like craft potions and create consumables, and like I ignored completely all of it. In fact, I think it was patched in at a later date. Like, it wasn't actually in the V1 of the game, they added it later, so it's like very easy to ignore that aspect.
Yeah, that was another reason why I feel like to really experience the entire game, there's so much extra stuff. Like, all of a sudden I'm an alchemist, I have to like gather herbs and make potions, and I'm also a magician. Like, I'm a mage. I got to worry about all these abilities. I'm like, do I need this stuff to like kill my enemies? Not really. Then why is it in the game? I don't know. It's very weird. We're just going to stick to the TV show then, and maybe read the books. Who knows? All right. Brim, you got another one?
Yeah, for sure. So the next one I have on my list, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Half-Life 2. Like, I know this is like a classic game. I'm not super into scary games, so I guess first, is this game too scary for me? And second, is this worth going back to play?
Man, for you, I think it might be.
Oh gosh,
there's moments where it gets pretty intense. What's the name? Ravenhelm or something? It's actually kind of infamous for being like one of the scariest parts of, or at least back in the day. You know, things have changed. We have like horror games nowadays, but back then, you know, when there weren't a lot of horror games, it's pretty scary. I have to say, like, it's another one of those games where if you don't get through the first fourth of it, you're probably not going to enjoy the last three fourths of it. Like, there's certain games I think that get better as you progress and like you get more abilities. Like, I would actually say God of War, that, you know, the latest one is one of those games. I was actually really kind of frustrated with it in the beginning. I was struggling with the combat. I actually turned it down to easy on one of the fights. And then, you know, I was thinking like, this shouldn't be that hard. And eventually I turned it back up to normal or whatever. But yeah, that game you have to get through until you get like certain abilities, God of War, I mean. And then with Half-Life, you know, it's pretty much the same gameplay loop the whole time. So if you don't enjoy that initial time that you spend with it, you're not going to enjoy the rest. But it's definitely like one of those kind of like Legend of Zelda things where it's like, I have to play through Half-Life so that I can say like I've played Half-Life, you know? It's one of those like milestone games. I mean, I'm not going to hate on people who haven't beaten it, but I think personally, like, so that you can speak to, you know, its legacy, you kind of should play through it. You should give it a go, Brigham.
Okay.
Maybe I'll give it a go too, because I haven't played either Half-Life. So that's one of those games where kind of slipped through my radar growing up gaming, even mm-hmm. though I kept hearing about, you know, the freaking, what was it called? The Orange Box or something.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Although Orange Box came with Half-Life 2 Episode 2.
No, okay. I think it came with all of them.
Oh, it did?
Right? Maybe not.
Maybe you're right. I feel like they gave Half-Life 2 out way for like peanuts. Like anything you bought, yeah. I was like, hey, here's a copy of Half-Life 2. It's like,
all right, I got one last one. BioShock Infinite. I've tried to play that game multiple times. I can't get through it. Wow. First person games, just I hate them. I hate them so much, man. They're so hard for me to beat.
That's interesting. My wife, who is a gamer, Kirsten, she's actually played through that one, and she didn't play through one or two. I played through both of them. And that's kind of the beauty of it, I think, is that can be like a standalone game. You don't have to play through one and two, which are pretty scary, admittedly. There's like a few scary parts of Infinite. But man, you gotta play through it for that story. Like, I don't know. It's probably been out for what, like 8 years now?
So I know a lot of the story, yeah.
You might already have it spoiled for you, but like the big reveal of that game is so epic and like probably, yeah, one of my favorite games as far as story goes. So I would say give it a go. It's like a 9 out of 10 for me, and you got to give it another try. Keep in mind, like, it's a little dated now. See, that's the other thing. Like, if you
dated,
keep putting it off, it's just going to get more and more dated and eventually be like impossible to play.
I will say I started playing BioShock, just the first one, because I got like the BioShock collection. And I put on easy, and you know me, I don't like scary games at all. I've been actually able to play through this one so far. I'm not very far, but I've killed the Big Daddy, which I thought was going to be like the scariest thing, but I was able to do that. And the nice thing about the remakes, I don't think they have this in the original one, but they have a little arrow on the screen to tell me where to go, which that's I'm so nice. Glad, because that map is freaking confusing. So I just run through, and yeah, it's pretty nice, and I'm super excited. I'm probably going to skip 2 and just go to 3 after the first one, but
yeah.
I have one more game.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this one, I don't know if you've played it or not, but I've heard a lot of good things about it, and I've been thinking about trying it out. It's called Kingdoms of Amular Reckoning.
Oh, man. That's funny, because I actually just installed that the other day. I think it's on Game Pass, and I remember starting this game a while back, and it's kind of like Fable slash, you know, Skyrim slash every other RPG. maybe Dragon Age is a good comparison. And yeah, no, you got me there. Like, I've actually never beaten that game. I didn't get very far into it. I think it just felt kind of like too samey as like those other games that I mentioned. So I didn't see anything in it that was, you know, valuable to keep me playing. And I think I looked it up, and it said like, you know, something over 30 hours, and I was just like, no, I'm good.
Hmm.
So okay. You got me. You found one I haven't beaten.
Okay. Interesting.
All right. So I got like two more questions here. So let's see if you can remember like your favorite game that you've beaten. I think you mentioned it earlier. What is it? I don't remember. Say it again. Your favorite game that you beat.
I really enjoyed playing through Death Stranding. I think that was one that maybe not my favorite game, like gameplay wise, like people have mentioned, it's a walking sim. Story wise, it's really good, really a unique experience, which is, you know, similar to Metal Gear Solid and all the Kojima games, like very unique story driven experience. I have to give a shout out, though. Maybe you guys have played this, to Last of Us 2.
Maybe we play Last of Us 2, John.
Well, did you
listen
it?
To the podcast? Yes, I beat it. I've beaten it almost twice, actually.
I watched the walkthrough on YouTube, so it's essentially the same thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. but I want to give it a shout out because, you know, Kirsten and I were playing through it. I mean, I was playing through it, she was watching, and it was... I don't want to like spoil. I mean, maybe we can say like spoiler warning. It's not really a big spoiler, but
We have a spoiler cast. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
Okay. Well, I'll just say you get through half the game and then you just kind of hit a wall, like intentionally from the game. And it's very hard to continue. Like you just don't really want to play it anymore. Like,
yeah.
And it's very intentional. Like they make it that way on purpose. And getting through the last half of that game, and I think like I looked it up at the time, I was like, okay, I feel like we're halfway, or I feel like we're, you know, seven eighths of the way through. Like, let me check and see how much longer we have. That's the halfway mark. Like, yeah, you have to play another 15 hours or whatever. And we were legit like so frustrated, so ready to give up. But yeah, if you play through it all the way, you'll realize like that's exactly the point. Similar to Death Stranding, you know, where it is a slog in the beginning, but it's kind of tailored that way. Like they want it to feel like that kind of game, which is weird. You know, you think like, why would you want your game to be hard to get through? But like, I think it adds some value to it as well.
See, I knew John was going to be a good guest. You know, just hopping on the Last of Us bandwagon. I love it. Last of Us is the greatest game of the last 10 years. I said it.
I stand that.
So, okay, last question I have here is, you get a chance to air your grievances, John. You've been listening to us for I don't know how long, and you did mention that you've gotten a little upset on some of the things Bergman and I have said. We've attacked some franchises, some game genres. We've said a lot of things here. So
made some mistakes.
This is where you get to tell us off. What have we said on the podcast that you wholeheartedly disagree with that you will defend here? You get 30 seconds.
Oh man. Okay. Shout outs to all my weebs out there. I get a lot of hate. It sounds like you guys are not big fans of JRPGs.
Not even a little bit.
No.
Admittedly, I was not either for a long time. Like, I didn't play many, and they're notoriously long, so not in my wheelhouse. But there's something quirky about them. They're kind of, like, very predictable in a way. Like, once you played one, you kind of know all the tropes. You know, you mentioned, like, Tales of Arise. It's like, you know exactly what this character is going to be like, and... It's similar to like people who have watched anime, like it's got a lot of parallels. Like there's the silly whatever character, there's the serious, you know, guy who eventually breaks down and becomes the sweet guy, you know, whatever. Like but anyways, JRPGs need to get some respect on this show. So I expect better from you guys. You don't have to love them, but you gotta respect them.
See, we're trying to respect them. We I mean, what was it? What one? Didn't Tales of Arise when didn't that win best RPG that game of the
year? Oh yeah,
awards?
We talked about that. Yeah. Genshin, we talked about Genshin Impact. We both played Genshin
Impact.
Okay,
yeah.
We tried.
Gotcha games,
tried.
That's fine, I guess. I think one of you said like Near Replicant, never even heard of that one. That's a pretty deep blow to all the Near fans. That's a pretty big franchise that has been around for a while. But admittedly, it was Japan only for a while. So I'll give you guys that one, I guess.
See, this is why we have.
Maybe we'll have an interview with a JRPG like stan or something at some point.
I already got one lined up for him. Don't worry. JRPGs will have their moments. Today is not this day. We're gonna hate on them until then, but yeah, I mean this was cool, John. I mean, this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted someone to give us a different perspective. Maybe, hopefully, we'll actually go back and beat those games that you mentioned because we haven't beaten except for Grand Theft Auto. I mean, come on, Brigham.
I mean,
That's ridiculous.
I know. Maybe when they make a GTA 4 remaster with checkpoints, then I'll play it. So we'll see.
I wonder if they would do that because they are thinking about bringing it back to the PS Store. So it would be cool if they also remastered. Honestly, I would have wished they remastered that over whatever the heck they did recently with that trilogy, because that's another thing I haven't beaten. Have you gone back and beaten those, John?
No, yeah, I started to play San Andreas, and it's just, you know, yeah, it's hard to say that it holds up well. Like, if you haven't ever played it before, then you should play through it at least once, but playing through it again voluntarily, I'm also not the type of person who likes to play through games multiple times, admittedly, so... Yeah, I played it to like get a feel for how different it was, and then I was done.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yep. That's pretty much how I was with them too. I was like, this is weird. Okay, I'm done.
Well, before we head out, John, is there anything you want to plug? I don't know if you want to.
Do you have a podcast?
Yeah, upcoming podcast. You want your Twitter? I don't know. Shout outs.
Yeah, no shout outs to my wife, my brand new baby boy Pax. I got 565 games on my spreadsheet that I've beaten, so I challenge listeners to come up with a list that's more than that. They actually have a feature on How Long to Beat now where you can track like all the games you're playing, all the games that you've beaten. I don't know why I keep plugging it, like I'm not sponsored or anything, but I just think it's a cool feature that they added. So
yeah, well, if the website wants to sponsor this podcast, we are all ears. So. You can reach the basementgamingpod@gmail.com.
I'm actually really glad you brought up your number because I want to see how it compares. I wonder if some of the people would tell us their numbers. If anyone's kept track, I've definitely not kept track because that would be very depressing. There are a lot of games that I haven't beaten. They're just sitting in my library somewhere, or just different games I bought recently. They're just like, nope. Or like, remember Phoenix Rising? That's a good example of a game that just like I just have here. Did you beat that?
No, I actually haven't. I beat. I remember Brigham and I were like inverse because I beat Assassin's Creed Valhalla and he beat. I think he beat, or at least got pretty.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I did beat Phoenix Rising. I love that game. Yeah, I was like, what is that game? I totally forgot the name of it.
It's all forgettable. If it's forgettable, I don't beat it. That's the rule. Okay. Yeah, I mean we've been at it for a while here, so yeah, man. Thanks, John, for coming out and telling us about your long history of gaming. Brigham, you got anything else?
No, that's it. Make sure, like I said, if you want to reach us any questions, you can over at Twitter at BasementGaming9. You can also email us at BasementGamingPod@gmail.com. You can find us over on Twitter at AppleBiscuit for me, and actually I don't even know Herb's Twitter handle.
I don't remember either.
But John's over at Johnny Poo if you want to say thank you to him on Twitter as well. And yeah.
Yeah, if you want to flame him for all his hot takes, go ahead.
Go for it.
we want the engagement, so it's okay. Oh, yeah. We'll jump in.
Of course.
But yeah, all right, everyone, thanks for listening, and come back next time.
Peace.
GG's.